It's the WJR Gardening Show, sponsored by English Gardens. Visit an English Gardens location near you this weekend and get 40% off one regular priced item with code WJR23. That's code WJR23. Now here's your host of the WJR Gardening Show, Ann Thomas.
Welcome to the WJR Gardening Show, sponsored by English Gardens. I'm Ann Thomas, and I'm here with Rick Vespa, president of English Gardens Landscape Company. And Rick, this is going to be an interesting show.
Ann, I think today is a great show. We're going to talk a little bit about the history of English Gardens and then give you some great gardening tips. And we have a very special guest.
Yes, we do. Gracie Vespa, English Gardens graphic designer. You did some really cool things during the pandemic that have paid off a lot for you.
Yeah, and so we'll talk about my Let's Grow video series that you can find on YouTube, kind of showing you the ropes, all things gardening, houseplants, everything to make life beautiful.
We'll get started right after these messages. Welcome to the WJR Gardening Show, sponsored by English Gardens. I'm Ann Thomas, and I'm here with Rick Vespa, the president of English Gardens Landscape Company, and Gracie Vespa, the English Gardens graphic designer. And in this first segment, Rick, let's just talk a little bit about this incredible family business. I want our listeners to know how the business started, who's involved.
So the business was founded in 1954 by my dad and Gracie's grandfather, Henry, and two uncles, John Darren and Andy Donatello. Today, the company is run by 9 second-generation owners, and we also now have 4 third-generation members of the business that are involved in different types of positions in the company. Gracie's a member of that group, of course. We currently have 6 stores in Metro Detroit and 2 landscape design and installation companies, different locations from our stores.
So early on, your family, your parents, why did they decide to get into this business? What was going on at the time?
Well, the dads were in the trades. And I think they were looking for a different lifestyle and a way of improving their lives and their families. And they saw an opportunity in the plant business. Now, one of my uncles was in the produce business.
Oh.
And there was sort of a synergy there, and that's the three of them went. And actually, English Gardens was a fruit market as well as a garden store. Mr. English was the original owner.
Now, is this something that you always wanted to do, Rick, as you watched them in the business?
That's a good question. Actually, I wanted to be an architect.
Okay.
But I saw an opportunity that, my dad sort of encouraged me. That's an interesting story, to go into the business. And I saw an opportunity when I went to college. I went to Michigan State for landscape architecture, sort of a bridge between horticulture and architecture, and found my way partway through that program, ended up with a business degree, and then when I graduated, came back into the business.
And how did Dad encourage you?
That's a long story.
I love it. Now, you must be very proud because sitting here with us is Gracie. And Gracie's part of the family, and you've brought her into the business. Gracie, it's great to have you on the show.
Thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
Tell our listeners just a little bit about your journey here to English Gardens.
Sure. So I actually joined the team in 2019, which we all know was the last bit of normalcy before the pandemic. And my background is actually in event production and planning. So I was living and working in Chicago, doing that large-scale event production. And after several years in that, I was a little bit burnt out and was kind of looking for a change and didn't really know what that was going to be. But at that same time, an opportunity opened up here, back home in Detroit, which I never thought I'd be back here, and at the family business, no less. And it was kind of sort of like stars aligning type thing. Felt like something I had to at least try. So moved back here in May of 2019 and started my role here as event coordinator and marketing assistant. So I did get a couple 6 months in there of planning some events for our customers, for our stores. But then everything kind of shifted and changed. And where I am now is more in a graphic design role. So I do all of our the creation of our emails, our digital ad campaigns, any signage you might see in the store for promotions and that type of thing, signage for events that are slowly coming back here. So yeah, that's kind of what I do here.
That must feel good to see these events coming back.
Yeah, it is. It's nice. It's been so long that, you know, we kind of just shifted lots of things in our business, as many people did. But I think people are, you know, back wanting that again and getting some education and learning new things and creating things. So it's good to see it back.
I felt bad for Gracie coming here and then, you know, the pandemic hits and no events. And I was amazed at how resourceful she's been, and she's responded to, you know, different areas that we needed help with. And yeah, I just never imagined she would come back to Detroit, let alone into the business. So I'm very proud of her.
Yes, you should be. It's awesome because there's also a story here talking about resourceful. During the pandemic, you did something that is really, really smart. Can you talk a little bit about
it? Sure. So we kind of put our heads together here in the marketing department, and we're trying to figure out from home, with all this work from home that was happening, what I could do to, I don't know, get some learning out there, spread the love of gardening, show people things. You know, everyone was on Zoom and watching videos and YouTube and listening to podcasts, and so like how we could fit in there. Mm-hmm. So we came up with this Let's Grow video series that was created to sort of highlight my journey as a young millennial in the world of houseplants, gardening, and all of that. And it came from a place also of me wanting to learn some of these new things.
That makes sense.
You know, types of materials you need for planting and container gardening and what grows where and how to take care of things. And I wanted houseplants in my apartment, so how to know which ones are good for my lighting conditions, all of that. So all of these episodes we did were topics that sort of covered a different learning, if you will. I covered everything. I think there's probably about 70 episodes now, which you can find on YouTube. Just search English Gardens Metro Detroit. You can watch those there. But yeah, we covered everything from container gardening and you know, decorating type things. Lots of Christmas episodes, of course, at Christmas time. There's a good variety of things. And the fun thing about it was that it was sort of a family affair with all of us working at home. My dad and I, he was kind of the secondary source of info for filming. And my mom was actually the film crew.
Dad was kind of like the expert.
Yeah, yeah. So I could have that person there. And then mom would be in charge of the camera. And we would go shop for product in the stores and, you know, to showcase. So it was a fun thing during that, you know, scary pandemic time. It was a good thing for me. And I think for other people, they enjoyed it.
It's a great idea. Now, I know it's the family business, but did you know a lot about gardening when you started the series, or where were you in that world?
Yeah, I didn't know much. I lived in Chicago, so I lived in lots of brick tall buildings, no yards. So never
did you
really
do any container gardening?
No, I didn't, but I do now. Never just really had a big interest or time in like wanting to learn about that. But, yeah, I started from the beginning with Let's Grow. I did, like, my first episode was tools to have in your, you know, gardening tool arsenal, which I had none. So had to get the basics, gardening gloves, shovel, watering can, all of that. So that's kind of a good indication of where I was starting from too.
Now you're in the marketing world. Do millennials like to garden? Are they into gardening, or where are they in that?
Yeah, so I think that first and foremost, houseplants is a big trend with people my age, and I think that has slowly started to shift into, outdoor gardening too. People wanting to grow their own food.
Yes.
Actually, one of my really good friends is starting their own garden in their backyard. Tons of different things planted. It's cool to watch. And I think it is kind of shifting to our age group again. And, you know, people are interested in that.
We definitely saw a shift in the age of our customers.
Yeah.
And I don't know if part of that was related to Gracie's program.
I bet
it
was.
Or, you know, a combination of the two things, but people staying at home, looking for things to do,
yeah.
People looking to grow their own vegetables, that kind of thing. So we saw a movement to younger customer coming into our stores, and it really worked great because we really need to cultivate those customers, and we want them to be successful and not feel intimidated by gardening.
Right. I was going to say, you want them to be comfortable and feel like
exactly.
they can ask you anything,
and
right?
And show them that they can do it, because
right.
it's not as hard as it might seem.
So let's take a quick break, and let's talk a little bit more about some of these Let's Grow episodes, and maybe we can give some advice to people young and old, right?
Yeah, definitely.
You are listening to the WJR Gardening Show. We'll be back right after this.
Welcome back to the WJR Gardening Show, sponsored by English Gardens. Visit an English Gardens location near you this weekend and get 40% off one regular priced item with code WJR23. That's code WJR23. Once again, here's your host, Ann Thomas.
You are listening to the WJR Gardening Show, and I am here today with the Vespas, Rick Vespa and Gracie Vespa. And Gracie, I just love this concept of your Let's Grow videos. Now, one of the ones that you mentioned in the last segment was the best tools to use. If somebody's just getting started and they want to just kind of tiptoe into the gardening, what should they have?
Sure. So I would say best to start out with a good pair of gardening gloves. That's a must for everybody. And then some other things in there, too. I would say a kneeler, good for doing work in the garden and not killing your knees. And then a watering can, of course. And then two tools that I have are a trowel and then a cultivator. And really, if you have those things, you can get a lot done, get started on a lot of projects, kind of all you need.
And I know you're a big fan of container gardening. So can you talk about what you would tell someone to do with regard to putting together a really pretty container?
Yeah. So that was one of my favorite segments that I did in my Let's Grow series. And I've actually done it a few times. I plant something new each season. So one thing I learned is that, you know, you can kind of create your own look. So think about the colors you like and the plants you like. Think about mixing different textures, just making something unique. So I usually start with a focal point plant that kind of goes in the middle. I've had this be dahlias in the past. I've also had it be Gerber daisies. Those are two good options. And then kind of fill in around there. And it's good to use odd numbers, so threes or fives in a container garden, because you can kind of space things out like that. So doing sort of a filler or mounding plant. So there's lots of varieties to choose from, filling in around the sides with some mounding plants and trailing plants, and then you've got yourself a complete look. And it's really fun to see how it grows throughout the season, how big things get, the color that comes in. It's really awesome.
So let me talk a little bit about the mechanical part of this.
Yes.
Talking about soil and drainage, when you're planting in containers, you need to make sure you have good soil and you should change it every year. And there's some other gizmos you can use for drainage other than just putting rock in the bottom. We have stuff like Better Than Rocks. It's a fabric to prevent or to promote drainage. And then we have these inserts that save soil called upsidaisies. And so you don't have to fill the entire container with soil.
Stupid question, but I'll ask anyhow. There's no such thing as a stupid question. So do you have holes in the bottom of your container? Do you want the three holes in the bottom of the container, or do you cover that?
No, you must have drainage in the bottom of an outdoor container, because if it gets rained on or sprinklers or anything hit it, you know, the water's got to flow freely. So when you put soil in a container, and depending on the quality of the soil you use, which is another thing, quality soil, not just heavy soil, the soil you choose is very important. But the drainage issue, you have to have a pot with holes in the bottom. You put the soil in there, sometimes that can compact around the holes and stop the drainage from happening. So some of these other products, gravel could be one, or this fabric, better than rocks, is another way of approaching
it. The Upsidaisy is my favorite invention. Yeah. It's really nifty. Helps you also not have to use as much soil in your container when you're planting it. So it's very cool.
So you have a lot of products here at English Gardens to help with container gardening.
Yep.
Now, the other thing I think is interesting is the video that you did on edible gardening. That's a really big thing nowadays. People want to plant different vegetables that they can eat.
Yep.
Farm to table.
Yeah, I think it really kind of picked up too during the pandemic. People were wanting to not only have an activity to do at home, but also grow your own food at home. Kind of the concept of the victory gardens came back a little bit. So yeah, just planting those simple things like tomatoes and peppers and herbs and
those are probably the main ones, and they're easy to plant. And again, you can plant them in containers. You don't need a parcel, for a full garden.
Right outside
the door of the kitchen, and you can harvest your herbs,
Basil,
while you're cooking.
Mint, all that.
And those are probably the most popular things, the different herbs and the tomatoes and the peppers. Yeah. And that's pretty easy to do.
Absolutely.
So the other thing that I know is something that you really love are the houseplants.
Yes. Yeah, I was excited. I really wanted my apartment to be full of houseplants. That was my visual in there. So I have quite the collection now, and I've learned so many skills about caring for them and selecting the right plant for your space. So keeping in mind all considerations like lighting, if it's near a window, where it's being placed, how much time you have to care for it if you're traveling a lot. Those are all things you can consider when picking out a plant. Two of my favorites I always recommend to people are the ZZ plant and the snake plant. Super easy to care for, and they really will thrive in any environment. So I think it's good for people my age. We're on the go, lots of traveling, working people. Those are two great options. And I just have to say, I did my first houseplant segment on Let's Grow in 2020, and I bought a Monstera plant, and it was a pretty, average size little guy, a few blooms or whatever, fronds, nothing major, and it is huge now. It is it's almost like a piece of furniture in my living room because it takes up so much space. Yes.
It's like a monster.
Yes.
Monstera.
It is. Yep. It is like a monster. So,
what did you do to it?
I just look at it and it just grows and it just loves where it is. It's the perfect, away from a window, but still getting some sunlight. So, it's just thriving. And I love that plant a lot.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
With these houseplants, one of the biggest things is water. And it's getting that right. Mm-hmm. Actually, I should say light too, but choosing plants for the right spot in your house as far as light is concerned. But then water is key. And we see a lot of plants over cared for, too much water. So in some cases, it's just a matter of putting these plants in the right place and then letting them do their own thing. They really don't take a lot of care.
Yeah.
How do you know if you're watering the plant enough or too much?
The perfect sign, yellowing leaves generally is an indication the plant's got too much water. And back to the drainage question, if you have a pot that doesn't drain, you may want to pull the plant out of the pot and see if there's water accumulating. But yellowing leaves will tell you generally that the plant has too much water. Browning on the tips is generally an indication not enough water, and those roots are getting scorched and the plant's suffering because of it.
Do plants require daily watering, or does it depend on the type of plant?
Oh, the age-old question. So, people want to know exactly how much water to use, how many days a week, et cetera.
That's me.
So it's not an answer we can give you because we don't know the exact humidity in your home. We don't know the exact amount of light. We don't know how hot you keep your home, in the summer.
And so that matters.
All of that matters, and it's a matter of getting used to the plant, how much water it needs. One great way to test the soil is take your finger and put it in the soil, and it'll tell you whether it needs water or not. But one thing for sure is if you have forced air heat in your home, really any kind of heat it tends to dry the air in the wintertime, pulls moisture out of the plant and out of the soil. So regular waterings are better with a little bit of water are better than once you remember every week or 10 days, because you pour that water in and it just runs through the pot. So regular watering with a little bit of water is, I think, the best way to approach it.
You know, a couple of weeks ago, we did a great show at your Royal Oak store about floral arranging, and I learned a lot. And I know you love that. You love floral arranging. Is it that hard to do?
No, it's not. And that's one thing I love to remind people. You know, you can easily create your own floral arrangements, picking out your favorite stems, different colors you like. Even if you have flowers growing in your garden, a cut floral arrangement is beautiful too. Just a matter of what you want, and you know, it makes a great gift, always cheers people up. It just like houseplants, flowers are great to have around in your home. Not only are they beautiful, but they cheer people up.
Yeah, they're good for your mental health.
Exactly.
Let's take a quick break, and we will continue this conversation today on the WJR Gardening Show in just a few minutes. You are listening to the WJR Gardening Show, sponsored by English Gardens. I'm here with Rick Vespa. He is the president of English Gardens Landscape Company, and Gracie Vespa, she is the English Gardens graphic designer. And Rick, I want you to start with kind of a clean, open canvas with regard to landscaping and gardening. What do you see? What's your vision when you think about gardening?
Well, you start with your space and how you're going to use it. I mean, that's really crucial. You know, is it a play area? Is it an entertaining area? All of that is part of garden design. But I think where you're headed, because we're eventually going to talk about annuals, is what are the different kind of plants that we use in our landscape design. So we start with trees and shrubs, the permanent foundation of our landscape. Those are plants that are there all the time. We have different structure during the year. Deciduous trees and shrubs, you know, lose their leaves, then they, of course, leaf out and flower. You have your evergreens that stay green all year long. Those are your permanent structure. Then you go to perennials. These are the plants that we plant once, and they grow for us, and they flower at different times of the year, but they die back to the ground at the end of the season. The last one that comes to mind are annuals, and those are the plants we plant in the spring. They flower for us all season long, and then they die back at the end of the season. We have to replant them every year. So the goal here is to use all of these plants for their strengths and then consider things like color, texture, height, and bloom time, and mix that all up in your design.
And this is the time of the year when people are really planting a lot of annuals, right? Okay. So what should they be looking for with regard to planting annuals?
So I think one thing to look for, kind of like I mentioned before in my video series I've done, you know, think about what color you want, think about texture, think about mixing different things. Of course, one thing we always say is right plant, right place.
Yes.
So consider where your garden is and all the elements that go into keeping plants alive. So, you know, water source, of course, you know, we have rain, but, you know, think about if you're near a water source, sun, shade, lighting, if there's any structures near, if there's, you know, rocks or stones in the landscape, all of those things kind of dictate, you know, what you can plant and where you can plant. And then I think another thing is just caring for those plants in general. So yes, there may be some plants that are better suited to sun or shade, but all plants kind of need those same few care tips. So obviously the first one is watering. So just to be sure that you're keeping an eye on watering and watering wisely, we like to say. So basically aim to water deeply 1 to 2 times a week. And like my dad mentioned before, you can kind of also tell if a plant needs water, not only in a container garden by sticking your finger in, but if things look dry and look like they're thirsty,
sure,
it's time to give it a water. I think another thing, fertilizing, if you want to talk about.
Right. Well, one of the things I mention all the time, I talk about the three things of fertilizing. So when you're planting annuals, I like to see you use a starter fertilizer like Biotone. Like to see something like Osmocote, which is a time-released fertilizer, and that'll feed for 4 months. So it really will feed that plant for the entire season. But it's a slow release. It's a very little bit amount of fertilizer. The starter fertilizer is also a very, very mild fertilizer. And then all during the season, the third one is the soluble fertilizer, the one we mix in water and we water with. We can use that as much as weekly. I think most people probably look to do it every 2 weeks or so. But that is a sort of a shot in the arm. It's a regular fertilizer we need to really maximize the performance of these annuals.
And, you know, one of the things that I think we could all agree on is that gardening is, it's personal. I mean, you can give advice about it, right? Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, people have to decide, as you point out, Gracie, and you, Rick, what is going to work best with their space.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, I think it is a personal thing, and people have preference, too. You know, not everyone likes the same color or the same look or the same fullness. People like hanging baskets or container gardening or taking their houseplants outside in the summer or creating that big, huge annual garden, or they're perennial people. There's so many different kinds and ways of gardening. So, yeah, I think...
You know something? I like to encourage people to experiment.
Oh, really?
So this, you know, is some science and some art. And we talk a lot about the science, but frankly, you know, a little bit of experimentation goes a long way. You can cheat with plants. Like, for instance, people will tell you impatiens and begonias should be grown in the shade. You know, I grow impatiens and begonias in the sun. But when you do that, when you cheat like that, you need to make sure you provide enough water for the plant to adjust. So not that I recommend you necessarily use the wrong plant or, you know, in the wrong place. That's not the point here. But there's some art to this and some experimentation. It'll kind of develop your love for gardening, because you'll have your own little ways of doing things that, you know, you developed on your own.
Yeah. And I find, too, in, you know, the stores, customers come back year after year for their favorite plants. So they're looking for this type, and they're looking for this hanging basket combo, or they're looking for this annual. People tend to, like, have their favorites, or they want to try something new. So it's a good – I think it's a good mix to have a little of both.
Now, one of the things you talked about at the beginning of this segment, Rick Vespa, is, you know, the trees, the shrubs, the perennials, the annuals – do you like to see all of that when you take a look at a landscape project?
Most of the time, the answer would be yes. There might be some, you know, specific areas that don't call for that kind of thing. Maybe they're a smaller area, or they have a specific concept in mind, if that makes sense.
But sure, right.
I think mostly you look for this layered approach in the landscaping. You know, I think the most beautiful landscapes are where you see maybe something tall in the back,
yes.
Maybe three or four levels, and it would go from the tallest, maybe your like hydrangeas, boxwood, and say another planting, a lower planting, which might be an annual bed, and that would give you your three layers. So in general, I like to see a mix of most of that stuff. I forgot the perennials in the concept, but you know, those usually are mid-height. But the bottom line is, yes, I'd like to see a mix of all of those.
And you still feel pretty good about impatiens and begonias here in Michigan. I know for a while, impatiens kind of got a bad reputation because they got sick.
Yeah, interesting. I was just reading something in my files on downy mildew, which we haven't heard in a while. The impatiens, the old varieties of impatiens had this disease, and it would wipe them out in the middle of the summertime, so you wouldn't get, you know, a full season out of them. And at first, no one knew what was going on. Subsequently, that problem, I don't know if the problem's gone away, but there are new varieties of impatiens that are resistant to that problem. Beacons are one that come to mind that you'll hear about, or you'll find in the stores now.
Let's continue this conversation in just a few minutes. You are listening to the WJR Gardening Show.
Welcome back to the WJR Gardening Show, sponsored by English Gardens. Visit an English Gardens location near you this weekend and get 40% off one regular priced item with code WJR23. That's code WJR23. Once again, here's your host, Ann Thomas.
You are listening to the WJR Gardening Show, sponsored by English Gardens on 760 AM WJR. I'm Ann Thomas. I am here with the Vespas, Rick Vespa and Gracie Vespa. And I want to start this segment out by talking a little bit about, you know, the common questions that people come into English Gardens and they want some advice from both of you. So the first one I want to talk about is pruning. Do you have to prune everything? How often do you prune? What do you do, Gracie?
So I think each plant might have its, you know, specific pruning needs that you can always talk to any of the experts at our store and we can help you out with that. But some general pruning instruction, it's pretty simple, you know, kind of locate those dead or damaged, sick-looking branches and remove them with a pair of pruning shears, another good tool to have in your arsenal. And then kind of cut back branches from there to shape the plant how you want it and to encourage that new growth. And I will jump in and say, I know hydrangea is very popular here, and I know they've got some specific guidance that you need to follow. So I'm going to pass that one off to Rick here.
It is an important one because old-fashioned hydrangeas, they bloom on new wood, so you can really almost cut them to the ground, and every year they'll flower for you.
What's an old-fashioned hydrangea?
Thing like Annabelle's, the big white flower. That's, you know, a general guide. And speaking of guides, we have a guide in the store that you can pick up that'll tell you on these different types of hydrangeas how to prune them. But the newfangled hydrangeas, many of the new varieties, bloom on old wood. So if you go and chop that plant down at the end of the year, you may have find yourself with a plant that has no flowers the following year.
I've had
very
that.
Common
been
problem.
There, done that.
Yeah, so you're not alone, and it's understandable. So, and we as an industry didn't do a good job initially of informing people well on this, but they're certainly beautiful plants. They tend to have, you know, stronger stems and more flowers on them, but they are to be treated differently, pruned differently.
So that kind of old dead wood that you see on a hydrangea at the end of the season, if it's one of the newer hydrangeas, do you just leave that sitting there then?
So what I do at home with the new hydrangeas, Endless Summer and some of those varieties, I will take the flowers off the top.
Oh.
And but leave as much of the stem as possible. And I won't prune that until literally right now. I was looking at my hydrangeas this morning.
Me too.
And, you know, we had frost in some areas of Detroit. So I was just looking at my hydrangeas this morning, and I've kind of been nipping at them here and there where I can see where the dead wood is. And I'm about to, like, finalize that process. So I'm just now finishing up on the pruning of my new varieties or hybrid hydrangeas.
What happens if you made the mistake of cutting them way down, the new ones, the new versions? How many years does it take for the flower to come back? Are we talking 1, 2, 3?
No, you should have flowers the following year.
So it's just you have to wait a year.
Yes.
And just have the plant. So the other thing I want to touch on, another common question I know you get a lot, and you're well able to handle it because of your pharmacy, your plant pharmacy, is how can I improve the soil in my garden? What type of advice do you have for people?
Well, simple is that if you have sandy soil, which does happen in Metro Detroit, organic material, peat, compost, that kind of thing. If you have clay, which is predominant in southeastern Michigan, you would need something like a soil conditioner or gypsum that helps break up and aerify the soil.
Now,
that's in a nutshell.
And I think another good thing to remember, too, is we can perform a soil test for you. So if you simply bring in a sample, someone at the garden pharmacy, you may run into my brother Tyler, can help you with a soil test. So we can kind of look and see what's going on and recommend the right products in our garden pharmacy to you.
Excellent service. Such a great idea. Now, what about fertilizing, specifically, Rick, the lawn? What type of advice do you have for people? Do you need to fertilize your lawn like once a month, or do you need to do it at all?
So I ask people a question about lawns. First of all, do you want a beautiful green lawn with fewer weeds or no weeds?
Yes.
Then you better fertilize it. And So like a well-fed lawn will resist weeds on its own without any extra chemicals, or extra treatments, I should say. But the bottom line is we have an easy process. It's a four-step process. We have a few different kinds in our stores. And you basically, you buy four bags at one time, and you apply them around the holidays. The first step is around Easter to prevent, and it'll help prevent crabgrass. It's not too late right now to still prevent crabgrass. And that first feeding is important. The second one around Memorial Day, and again, you can kind of reorganize these depending on the calendar a little bit. That has a broadleaf weed killer in it to kill the dandelions that are starting to come up. An important distinction, the first application that has crabgrass preventer in it goes on a dry lawn, so the granules go into the soil. They prevent the crabgrass from germinating. The second treatment, which is has the broadleaf weed killer in it that kills the dandelions, goes on a wet lawn because the granules stick to the weeds and they kill the weed that way. The fertilizer will find its way to the soil. Third step around the 4th of July for a summer infusion of nutrients, and then the fourth step around Labor Day, which is your sort of final feeding again to fortify the lawn for the coming winter and into the next spring.
One of the things that I've been seeing on a lot of lawns recently would be like, you know, the nice green lawn, but underneath kind of like dead grass. Do you recommend doing anything with regard to that?
So some people will thatch the lawn,
yes.
You know, and that's an aggressive way of removing some of that brown thatch. I like to see at a minimum before you do your fertilizer applications in the spring or even in the summer, dry lawn so you're not tearing out good lawn. If you work on a dry lawn, use an aggressive raking with a lawn rake. Metal tines are the best, the smaller tines. Those tend to work better on getting into the dead grass. Aggressive raking with a garden, like a leaf rake type of thing, is a good way of getting thatch out without going all the way to a thatching, which is a much bigger job.
And what about seeding? Do you recommend any kind of overseeding at any point in the season?
Yeah, I think it's great to overseed if you have thinning lawn or you can even customize the blend of your turf by adding seed, give you a better consistency or texture to the turf. Spring or fall are best because of the temperate climates, you know, you have cooler temperatures and generally more rainfall. But you can seed in the summertime as long as you're watering.
Great advice. Rick Vespa, president of English Gardens Landscape Company, and Gracie Vespa, English Gardens graphic designer. Thank you so much for being here today. It's been really great to have you both here.
Thanks for having us, Ann.
And you've been listening to the WJR Gardening Show, sponsored by English Gardens. I'm Ann Thomas. Enjoy the rest of your weekend.